Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We got you back in studio.
That's right. We got it worked out now, kid.
All right, good. Kenny and JT show got you till 7 o'clock tonight because the Indians and Rays were postponed until tomorrow because of the weather that's coming through Florida. And so it's a doubleheader tomorrow starting at 12:10 p.m. first game, and then a half an hour after that game, they will start the second game. So the Tribe and Rays will do a double dip tomorrow. And to talk about what went down last night and to preview that matchup and talk some pitching in Major League Baseball, let's go to the Wake 'em Way hotline right now. Bring in former Indians pitcher, current Rays TV analyst, Brian Anderson, joining us here on the Kenny and JT Show. How are you, B.A.?
I'm doing well. Just getting ready to hunker down for this storm that's coming through. But other than that, things are going quite swimmingly.
Okay, so how bad is this tropical storm that's coming through, B.A.? Is it eventually going to be a hurricane, or how bad is it down there?
You know what? It's funny that you asked that because I just saw a report where they are now expecting it to at some point reach Hurricane Cat 1 status before it makes landfall. And I don't think that they feel it's going to be a hurricane for very long. But it's certainly right now the winds are hovering around 70 miles an hour and they need to get to 75. Once they get to 75, it'd become a hurricane Cat 1. But like they said on the report, they said, you know, the difference in real world about 70, 75 miles an hour winds, it's all bad. So whether or not it gets that classification, we'll wait and see. But they expect it to. Once it hits land, I think that it'll slow it down a little bit. But you still have a chance for, up to 4 foot of storm surge. You're going to get torrential rains, really bad winds. So it could get nasty for a bit.
It's amazing. I don't want to turn the entire interview into a weather report, B.A., but for us, July 6th in Northeast Ohio, we're just wondering if it's going to snow tomorrow. Are there any evacuation plans in Florida right now?
You know what? No, they have not called for that at all. And usually, in this day and age of social media and everybody kind of CYA, if there was any thought that you should get out of Dodge, those warnings, and evacuation plans get broadcast pretty early on. So I think for Florida and people that have grown up here, this is just, this is the cost of doing business in Florida, and it's going to be a tropical storm and you get different alerts about, in town and different areas that you can go and load up on, sandbags and places that you can get water. There's a lot of different avenues like that they allow you to go down to get ready. But outside of that, I think people down here that have spent any amount of time understand that this is part of it. And it may not be pretty, but take care of yourself, shelter down, and you should be okay.
So safe bet we will be playing baseball tomorrow.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because as you see these models continually changing, you're seeing that this thing could linger. It was supposed to hit landfall around the Tampa Bay area around 8 o'clock tonight. Now you're seeing that push back to 1 o'clock in the morning, in some places maybe 2 o'clock in the morning. So there's a chance that it's lingering. And then you just wonder if it's lingering too much, will that 12:10 be pushed back to 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock? I don't think they anticipate that now, but I'm certain that is on the table depending on how long this storm takes to actually get to landfall and then move its way out of here. But at the end of the day, I am supremely confident that we are going to get both games in tomorrow, whether it's at 12:10 or shortly after that. But we should be no problem to play baseball tomorrow.
Happy to have former player, current analyst, and future meteorologist Brian Anderson with us here on the Kenny and JT Show, talking Tribe and Rays last night. Let's go back to that game, B.A. The Rays jump out early. It's a 4-0 lead. The Indians come back to take the lead, and then Emmanuel Clase blows it in the ninth, and both teams have not been playing well as of late. So how big of a win was this for Tampa last night, and extends the Indians' losing streak to 7 games?
You know what? You made a great point there. I thought it was a huge win for the Rays and a bad loss for the Indians for the fact of you talking about that. No, they're not playing good baseball. You know, the Rays had not, they won their last road game. It was actually, ironically enough, against Toronto in Buffalo, but they had lost 10 road games previous to that. Were not playing good baseball at all. And were able to pick up that win, then come home. The Indians, of course, came into Tropicana Field having lost 6 in a row. And so, and the back and forth nature of the game, I think, is the other thing that made it a big win for the Rays and a tough loss for the Indians, because the Rays jumped out and you thought, okay, Indians offense has been struggling as of late. You take that 4-0 lead, then that 5-1 lead. Okay, you're going to be able to run away with this. And then all of a sudden, it looked like the Indians were just an offensive juggernaut, hitting the ball all over the field, making things happen, and taking that 8-5 lead. Once that happened, you know, I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a bad loss for the Rays, because they are known for their pitching, for their run prevention. They had a 4-run lead at 2 different points, and they just are getting their doors blown off now. And so you had that kind of swing of emotion, and for the Rays to be able to chip away and then be able to close it out in the ninth inning off of Class A, who has been so very good, for the Tribe, that is a tough loss for them for sure. And obviously a big win for the Rays.
Brian Anderson, our guest here on the Kenny and JT Show. Go ahead, JT.
B.A., in a normal, and this is, I guess, as normal as we could have in the last 2 years, 162 game schedule. Are these really the dog days? I mean, we didn't expect the Indians to be this much above 500 at the All-Star break, but at the same time, we didn't expect them to go on a 7-game losing streak, 8-game losing streak, whatever it may eventually become. Is there really a dog days of a regular baseball schedule?
You know, there is, but it's not anywhere near now. You know, when you get into August, you get past the trade deadline, and you get into the middle of August, you know, it's hot. There's a lot of games under your belt. It can bog down for a time. I never really experienced that as a player. I mean, I felt like every day was a blessing, and you get out there and you play, and I never really ran out of energy. But there are certainly parts of the schedule where it kind of bogs down, and certainly not now, because right now it's a sprint to the All-Star break. Everybody knows you've got, you know, 4 days off coming up very soon, and you want to go into that break with a full head of steam. So right now, you know, you've got a sprint to the All-Star break. Coming out of the All-Star break, everybody's refreshed and rejuvenated, and you pick up where you left off. Once you get into mid-August, it bogs down for a little bit. Then all of a sudden, September hits, and once September hits, you see the end of the schedule, and you see where you are in the standings, and you see what needs to be done for you to maintain your playoff spot or to earn a playoff spot, and once again, it becomes a sprint. But this time of the year, it should, if it's bogging down for you as a player or your team, that is a bad sign. That should not be happening at this point. But with the Indians, and you're talking about this losing streak, you really have to look. You know, I think that coming into the season, the question mark was the Indians' offense. Were they going to be able to score enough? Because certainly they're going to be able to pitch. But when you talk about Savali being down and Plesac being down and Bieber being down, And the Indians not having the depth that I think they wish they did at this point, when you're running out guys like Mejia and Hentges and Logan Allen, you know, in the game last night, these guys that really aren't yet even proven commodities coming out of the minor leagues, and you're throwing them, you know, into the big leagues with expectations for your team. That's a tough ask. And so you've seen outside of the big three for the Tribe, anybody else who started a game, I think going into last night's game, last night was the 43rd game for the Indians that was not started by Bieber, Plesac, Savali. 43rd. They have one quality start out of those 43.
Wow.
That's all you need to know. It's actually quite amazing that the Tribe is above 500.
Brian Anderson, our guest via the Wake 'em Way hotline. We're talking Indians and Rays. Former Indians pitcher was on that 97 World Series team. Two different stops, 3 years with the Indians. Currently the Rays analyst. You've been doing this for a while, B.A. What, 2011, I think you went full-time. How you liking this media job that you prepared for when you were in your playing days doing all kind of radio interviews?
Yeah, unknowingly prepared for. Yeah, you're right. The preparation was there. I just didn't know what it was going to lead to. And I'll tell you, I'm having a blast. You know, the first experience that I got with it really was when I was rehabbing my second Tommy John and started the Tribe Report with Al Pawlowski. And we were doing that up there on Sports Time Ohio once a week. And that was really my first forge into TV. And then in 2008, I attempted to play again. Blew out for the third time, had to retire, but actually got asked to do a couple of games down here for the Rays because Joe McGrain was going to be missing a week. And so I got to do a couple of games with Dwayne Stats, my partner now. That was the first time I'd ever done a game by myself. I'd done some three-man booth with the Tribe, with Matt and Rick. And so that was the first time I ever got to do it on my own. And then 2009, I did 40 games. 2010, I did 50. And then, like you said, 2011, it became my full-time deal. I can't believe how long it's been. I can't believe that I've been doing it for this long. It's pretty crazy how these seasons, as a player and even now as an analyst, how they just one after the other, and they move rather quickly and fly by, and so you try to enjoy it and as much as you can. But it's a blast. It's the one thing that I have found outside of playing, and nothing will ever be able to duplicate being out there on the mound in front of a crowd at the major league level playing baseball. Nothing will ever match that. But there is something about live TV and them counting down in your ear, 3, 2, 1, and the red light goes on. And I'm telling you, you learn quickly. If you're not prepared, you're going to be exposed. And so you still get that little heart flutter on the countdown. And it's the only thing that I have found outside of playing that gives you that little butterfly action in the gut.
It's got to be a great time to be in Tampa Bay as well. City of Champions. You got the Buccaneers there. You got the Lightning. They're one game away from winning another Stanley Cup. And you've got the Rays. They were in the World Series last year. And my question's got to be this, B.A. When are they going to build a new facility for that team?
Oh, boy. That's the million-dollar question. I mean, that is, who knows? You know, there has been so much going. I remember when I came down here in 2008, they had designs on building a stadium down in St. Pete on the water with a roof, a retractable roof that kind of mimicked a sail. And then all of a sudden that fell apart. And then there was talk, you know, here most recently about a new state-of-the-art stadium in Ybor City. That fell apart. Then there was this talk of, well, we're going to do the first part of the year in Tampa or St. Pete, and then we're going to go to Montreal. I don't know where in the world that's going to end up leading to, but I don't know. I don't think that the political climate down here is one of which you're going to be able to go out and get a ton of dough from the state. And at the same time, you know, when you look at the market as far as corporate presence, I think out of the 30 Major League Baseball teams that the Tampa St. Pete region, even though it is growing exponentially, right now sits at 29th. In corporate presence. So there's not a lot of corporate dollars either. So I don't know what's going to happen. Stay tuned. I know that Major League Baseball feels that if there's a stadium in the right place down here, that it can work because, you know, certainly we get pretty good TV ratings. So there is definitely interest in the team, but people just don't make their way down to St. Pete. Tropicana Field, not real easy to get to. You know, if you're coming from anywhere in Tampa, you're crossing a bridge, and at that time of day, traffic can be, backed up, and it can be rough to get down in there. So you need to get that stadium where there is land around you, because if you look where Tropicana Field is, there's an awful lot of water around Tropicana Field where you're not being able to draw any people. I mean, you're just not able to draw. Like I said, they've got to come down through Tampa and over bridges at a tough part of the day. So that will be interesting to see. But as far as the city of champions, you're absolutely right. The Lightning are going to close out the Canadians. The Rays obviously going to the World Series. Tampa Bay Buccaneers defending Super Bowl champs. What's going to be so awesome for me is because everybody down here knows I'm an unabashed Cleveland Browns through and through fan. it's going to be so awesome this year that the Browns knock off the Bucks in the Super Bowl, and then I get to pound my chest around town all offseason. That's going to be where it gets really fun.
We'd love to see that. Here's another thing, too. Draw a lot of comparisons between the Tampa Bay Rays and the Cleveland Indians for, you know, we already know the reasons why. I don't know if it's an ownership problem down in Tampa Bay, but the thing that they've got in common is we're always going to look at the payroll. And when a team like the Rays makes the World Series, it makes it easier for us to think anyway that that's the same thinking and reasoning that the front office of the Indians might have. How long until that fades away? I mean, if you're not paying these guys and they're still good, isn't there a chance that eventually these guys end up being in pinstripes from the Rays?
Well, yeah, that's always the fear. And that's why you see, you know, what ends up happening, unfortunately, is these guys come up and they make a splash. Really good players. And as, you know, and sometimes even with a guy like Evan Longoria and Blake Snell, they sign them to those team-friendly long-term deals. But, you know, they never seem to see the end of that deal. In fact, I think when they traded Blake Snell last offseason, he still had 3 years left on his deal. And these guys, when you talk to them, you read their quotes and you listen to them being interviewed, they understand I'm not going to finish my career as a Ray. I mean, at some point, especially if I'm putting up numbers and I am being, you know, very successful, whether as a pitcher or a hitter, they are going to flip me for prospects to try to rebuild the system and to keep this thing churning along. And that's just the way that they do business. And it's become, That's it. They're not trying to hide that that's how they're going to do things. They're not trying to hoodwink the fan. That's why it'll be so fascinating to see what happens with Wander Franco, who, you know, obviously is in the big leagues now, and he's been the number one prospect in Major League Baseball for the last two seasons. So this guy comes with a lot of hype, a lot of ability, just a tremendous young man, just 20 years old. And so how that is handled will be interesting because the fans have been clamoring for him since he was 18. So, that is the interesting juxtaposition of how this team does their business and how they balance staying competitive year in and year out in most years is what arguably one of the toughest divisions in sport, let alone baseball. The American League East, when you start looking at what Toronto is building, what the Red Sox have been able to do, you thought this was going to be a down year for the Red Sox. Not so much. And what the Yankees are always capable of, it is a tough division to be competitive in. And so the Rays have said, well, we can't match them financially, and we are not going to be able to have the star power they have, so what do we have to do? And that was get creative. And I think that you're seeing the Indians and teams like that trying to follow along and make it work like the Rays have. But it is not easy. You have to be extremely creative and nimble as a front office. And when you make these trades, you have to hit on them. You can't miss. The guys that you bring back have to be productive for you. You have to draft well. You have to develop well. There is a lot that goes into it for it to be sustained success. And I think the Indians and teams like that, and even the Rays, and they've been very good at it, know that there's very little margin for error to have that continued success.
Brian Anderson is our guest via the Wake 'Em Way hotline, former Indians pitcher, now analyst for the Tampa Bay Rays. And B.A., along those same lines, Kevin Ibach, his dad, Bob's a friend of mine. Kevin's in the front office there, director of pro personnel, pro scouting, and other guys like that. How much pressure is there on those guys? Because they're not going to spend a lot of money. And Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff, they know that as well. And Tito knows that as the manager. So these franchises mirror each other, and they have yet to win one, but they each have gotten to the promised land to play for one. So how much pressure is there on those guys in the front office to not swing and miss on important trades, important draft picks, important free agent signings?
I think the pressure is huge because they understand that they in a way are the lifeblood of the organization. The moves that they make, if they miss on them, not only are you out the really good player or players that you just traded while they're still in the prime of their career, but the guys that you got back are not now performing. So your team is worse off in two different ways. So there is a ton of pressure in that position. And it's interesting that you mention about Ibach, because he was a big part of the trade that the Rays made with the Pittsburgh Pirates, where they sent Chris Archer to the Pirates. And originally that deal was going to be for Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow. And Ibach said, hey, what about this kid Shane Baz? And the Rays, I don't think, thought that they were going to be able to pull that off, but they asked anyway, and the Pirates went along with it. And so now you get Tyler Glasnow, Austin Meadows, and Shane Baz, a younger high-end pitcher for Chris Archer. I think everybody feels that trade was a huge win for the Rays. But the ironic thing about all of it is Shane Baz, who has now made his way to AAA and dominating there, has an opportunity to maybe be the best of the three coming back from Pittsburgh. And that was all because of Ibach. That was all because of his recommendation and him pushing to try and get him in the trade. And he was able to do just that. So these guys are savvy, and they had better be, because they've got a lot of pressure on them.
All right, you mentioned Tyler Glasnow. I heard his comments when he went down with the injury, talking about the sticky stuff, right, the spider tack and all of that. I'm curious, as a former pitcher, B.A., and since you're not playing anymore, you can tell us, did you use any sticky stuff in the day, and how much of a big deal is that for these guys, and could it lead to that injury that Glasnow was talking about?
Okay, first of all, no, I didn't use anything. In fact, I felt that even a little bit of sweat and rosin was a little bit too sticky for me. There were times on really hot, muggy days that I would allow rosin on the back of my hand just to keep sweat from rolling down onto my fingertips. But outside of that, on my fingertips with sweat and rosin, it was too sticky. I didn't feel like I had good command of the baseball, which is what's so ironic about these guys talking about all this grip stuff. That's number one. So I didn't use anything. Outside of, maybe a moisture from my tongue, just to get a grip that way. But rosin was too much of a grip for me. On top of that, I really think that Tyler Glasnow, and I know that he spoke out of frustration, with the injury and everything like that. But I, at the end of the day, I would be surprised that would have caused the injury. You know, you've got to remember that this guy is 6'8" tall. Tall, lanky, throws 100 miles an hour, and oh, by the way, picked up a new pitch this year for the first time, a slider, which is a pitch that can be hard on the elbow. And he incorporated that into his mix in spring training, and it wasn't like he broke it in, slowly and surely. It became his second most used pitch. He was throwing it, 32-33% of the time. And so his mechanics, the new pitch, all of that, and the amount of torque that he creates to throw in triple digits, I think that had a lot more to do with the injury than anything sticky or tacky. And outside of that, I will just tell you that it has really intrigued me, this whole sticky stuff. And I did just a deep dive into it. I mean, just reading on it, talking to people, off the record, on the record, just to find out. And I'm telling you right now, and the reason that Major League Baseball is cracking down so hard, as well they should, is this stuff is every bit as performance enhancing as the steroids were. There is no question. It allows these pitchers to spin the ball in ways that is not natural. And the hitter sees it. I swing where it's supposed to be, and it's not there. Their brains, the muscle memory over the years. I read stuff from a professor of kinesiology and on how hitters build their library of pitches all through their life. And so now they see the pitch come out of a pitcher's hand. They know about what this pitcher's velocity is. They pick up, okay, four seamer, boom, here it is. I'm on time, except that pitch is 3 inches above the bat.
Brian,
even though the guy's only throwing 92 or 93 miles an hour. It is absolutely amazing what this stuff has been able to do. And that's the fine line that you cross between, I want to make sure I have a good grip on the baseball, or I want something so sticky that I can spin this. I can throw sliders around the corner.
See,
and these hitters just didn't have a chance. And really, that's how this all started, is these hitters were going to Major League Baseball saying, we don't have a chance. I mean, the ball's supposed to be here. It's not there. And that's how this all started. It was really becoming a problem.
You're kind of hitting on something. I'm trying to get in there and try to figure this out. You could probably help me with this one. The difference between the velocity of these young guys, everybody seems to be throwing in the mid-90s, but they don't have two or three pitches like the veterans. Am I imagining this, or is this the real deal? Is that the real difference between these minor leaguers trying to be major leaguers right now because they have to have the next man mentality up? Or am I missing something? Is it harder to develop that second and third pitch, but yet they're just trying to impress people by throwing in the mid-90s?
Yeah. I mean, the game has become about velocity and spin. That's really what the game has come down to. And you're reading about these, you know, you're reading about, I read things where teams were introducing some of this sticky stuff to their lower minor league guys that are just coming into the system. So that when they got to the big leagues, nobody could claim a big jump in spin. They could be like, no, he's been spinning the ball like this in baseball. You know, they're like indoctrinating them. I read an interesting article by a very reputable writer that said that there are teams out there that have chemists on payroll to develop this stuff. I mean, it became an ugly, ugly thing. If half of what the research that I did, if half of it's true, it's shocking. I will tell you one thing. There was a writer that went and went to a pitching academy outside of Pittsburgh, and he wanted to see these different substances and how they affected the pitch, perhaps. He's just doing his own research. And he ended up joining up with a couple of college kids that were pitching, you know, for different universities. One was in Division II. I think one of them was University of Pittsburgh. And so they went through all these different substances. And so what you had to do at the beginning is you had to develop a baseline. Now, remember, this is a writer. This guy, I don't know if he played. If he played, it was at a low level. But his baseline was between 56 and 59 miles per hour on a four-seam fastball, and his spin was like mid-1400s. 1440, 1450. So just to make a long story short, it was one of the best articles I read on this whole thing too, because they were talking to people all over the game. It's fascinating. But all that to say, he gets down to the last substance, which is SpiderTac. We've all heard of SpiderTac now. So, and this is all, by the way, in one session. So he gets to the SpiderTac. He throws his pitch. The pitch velocity registers at 59.1, right in his baseline. His baseline was 56 to 59. The pitch with the SpiderTac, 59.1. The spin rate on that pitch, 18.10. His baseline was 1440 to 1450. The spin with the SpiderTac was 18.10. That is inches of rise.
Wow.
At 59 miles an hour. So just let your mind go and wander and think about guys throwing 92, 93, 98. It was that bad. Yeah, and I can send you guys the article. It was in the Score, thescore.com, and it was one of the most eye-opening articles. But there it was. This guy, he didn't increase his velocity. It just increased the spin. So it was 2 or 3 inches of rise on his fastball. And like I said, this is all done in one session. And that's when you start to realize this is the problem. This is the problem.
No doubt. Yeah. Hey, B.A., we're up against it here. Great stuff, as always. Whenever we have you on, it's always entertaining and informative. Thanks so much for making time. Continued success there with Tampa. Maybe we'll see you again down the road when the Indians and Rays are playing in a wild card game or something like that. How's that?
How about that, or how about the Super Bowl parade after the Browns knock off the Bucks? We'll see you there.
Hey, how about this? I do a Browns post-game show, and I look for celebrity guests after Browns games this year. I'm going to hit you up. We'll do a Zoom interview after a Browns victory this season, all right?
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know how I qualify as a celebrity, but I'll take it. Thank you.
All right, B.A., be well, my friend. Thanks so much. Brian Anderson, former Indians pitcher, now Rays analyst, joining us here on the Kenny and JT Show.